What is happening? Welcome to another episode of The Craft. I'm your host, Nick Pollock, and I'm so thrilled to have recurring guest Eno Saris with us today. Eno, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. I was just attended my first official regular season ball game as a journalist yesterday. Got to talk to Dylan Cease about his 65-mile-an-hour, and I quote him now, troll pitch that he throws now. Talked a little bit to Luis Campuzano, who uses an axe bat, but chokes up on it. And then also has one of the more unique batting stances in baseball because he wide open. Yeah.
Why does he choke up on an axe bat?
He was a little offended by my question, I think.
Well, it's just like, well, what's the purpose of the axe bat then? Right.
I was like, making that face. I was like,
right.
But the axe bat was like designed so that you could hold it there and not hurt your hamate, right? And he goes,
right.
No, the axe bat was designed to make you feel good when you swing it. And it
but
feels
if you're
good
choking up.
Huh?
He didn't explain like the choking up
he's
part.
Just
like, with
he was just basically saying that's how it feels good for me.
All right. Well, that feels good. That's cool. Great. I mean, honestly, that sometimes it is like that. It's just for whatever reason, I don't want to think about why. I just know that this is this. And
well, you had a better reason for the other one.
Right.
It's going to go into a story, but I'll give you guys a little taste of it, which was he says he's wide open in his batting stance. Like his front leg is like behind him almost. Like it's super wide open. And I was like, is that because Adam LaRoche used to be kind of wide open from the left side? And I was like, is that so you can see the pitcher with both eyes? And he's like, yeah, maybe. You know, because one of my theories about platoon splits is that you're kind of using one eye on certain pitches.
Wow, that's really cool.
And so I was like, is it because of the two eyes? And he goes, no. He said, pitching and hitting are rhythm and timing.
Yes.
Rhythm and motion. And he said most hitters want to start their motion when the pitcher breaks their hands. And he said, I'd rather start my motion when the pitcher starts his motion. So I'm wide open because it takes me a while to get to my batting stance, which is the amount of time that the pitcher is taking going through his motion. And I thought that was really smart because if you now think about the other thing I heard from Dylan Cease that like, basically, to throw 65 miles an hour, he has to kind of like put less power into his body.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you could maybe see that with your eyes and maybe even be able to say, whoa, that's a weird pitch. But I think it'd be even more likely to spot that the pitch was weird if you were timing to his entire rotation, right?
Yeah.
So if you had that leg open and you were like, and you'd be like, whoa, this is really slow.
right.
But maybe your mechanics would allow you to kind of slow your body down. You know, it's really interesting because whatever he's doing works pretty well. He's a really high contact hitter with who's hit a ball harder this year than he's ever hit it before. So, you know, I think that he's a really exciting player. So it's interesting that he has these different ideas. But
yeah, definitely. Yeah. I love that.
Choking up an axe back is weird.
Yeah. Well, that one's a strange one. Also, what you're saying about two eyes looking at it and then following all the way through with two, really, instead of more of one than the other.
I mean, think about it.
Point.
You've seen platoon splits on arm slots, right?
Yep.
There's a couple, sort of important pieces. I think maybe the one is on pitcher list about platoon splits on arm slots, and like. One of the biggest places for a huge platoon split is that kind of Tanner Houckian and Chris Salian, like basically sidearm thing. And if you think about sidearm and you're standing in the box and you're standing sideways, like really only one eye is tracking that thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Meanwhile, like lefties get even better of an angle to look at it when you have a sidearm too, for Tanner Houck. For example.
Oh, yeah. Now you're seeing it for a long time. You're seeing it with two eyes for a long time. It almost seems like it's further than 60 feet just because it's got a cross.
Right.
It is probably in a weird sort of it's like geometry in a way.
Yeah, I'm doing Pythagorean theory in my head right now. Yeah.
Yeah. Of course.
What's also interesting, I remember a lot of people would, I don't know, not necessarily laugh, but just not quite understand the Tony Batista, right? The super open one. And the thing that I would always say, you know, I remember coaching, some of my kids were laughing at this kind of thing. I was like, no, this is great. I actually even considered it for myself for a second, because what it does, I mean, if you notice every single hitter, and it's like this with every pitcher too, you have to, it's just about getting to a certain spot at a certain time, right?
Right. At a certain point, almost every hitter looks the same.
Exactly. So whatever you need to do to ensure that you're transferring your weight properly, that you're getting to that moment, whatever is most comfortable for you to do that, do it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I can absolutely understand if someone like Cavissano or Bautista, they were struggling with getting enough momentum, or that they were struggling getting to like leaning in too much, mm-hmm. whatever it is, that they need that extra little bit from pulling from here into there that creates the flow that they want. It's a lot the same way of like pitchers who are really simple with it. They just do like one small, like mini step left, and then they just go into their motion, while other guys need to have the whole hand over their head, mm-hmm. pulling up the leg, all that kind of stuff, right? It's about that rhythm and getting, when you're at that spot that you need, are you able to generate all the energy and
everything at the right place, at the right time? Yeah.
Yeah. So I always dug it. And I love that guys. It reminds me a little bit of like shooting grandma style at the free throw line, because everybody looks at it and goes, this is ridiculous. We're not going to do that. You know,
and then you hit 10 straight free throws.
Right. And we don't care as much in baseball. Like, dude, that guy's a dope hitter. He's a dope hitter. Who cares? Like, Craig Council, right. If you're great like that, we love it. We embrace it. You know,
they would laugh you out of the gym.
Right, exactly.
Another thing that I think about, though, is like on the kid level, what you're talking about in terms of what makes you feel comfortable becomes really obvious, because when a kid is uncomfortable at the plate, they don't have the like social baseball skills to hide it.
Yeah, right.
And so my kid's been hit a bunch of times, and I've been noticing that kind of his first move, mm-hmm. when the pitcher pitches, is away from the plate.
Yeah, always, yeah.
Because kind of like, and then he has to be like, okay, I'm getting in there, which means that he's kind of late, you know, and sometimes like misses his chance to actually swing at it, you know? So I'm thinking about being like, hey, you like the Padres, you like Camposano, like try that, because if you're that open, the first move that you have to make is toward the plate.
Yeah.
You know, you have to jump in there. So if you're kind of jumping out, like, let me give you a move that's like into the plate, you know, so that you're like, okay, I'm doing this.
Yeah. That's actually a really good call. There's I'll an old,
if he's like willing to try it, but
there's an old story with my friends of, one of them didn't want to play baseball because he would just get hit in the butt. I'm not even kidding. He was like 7 years old or 8 years old, and it was like the first year that kids were pitching or something. First or second game, they threw it at his butt. And what's so funny is that he turned around, of course, like, but it's so slow. So he literally made a move like away, like toward the catcher, and it still hit him, you know? And he's like, I don't want to play again. His dad made him play. Next year, his brother was playing too, twin brothers. And he got hit again. And props to him, he stuck around. He actually still played through like JV, but it was one of those things of like, is he gonna do this or not, you know?
I've got a segue for you.
Yeah, please.
And watch this is beautiful.
So good.
Watching the Little League, almost everybody has 20 command. Like Ronel Blanco has 20 command.
He didn't have it in that game.
No, I thought the command was great in the game.
Yeah.
And in fact, I was watching some of the clips. I especially looked at 2-0 and 3-0 and 1-0 counts.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this one. So in 2-0 and 1-0 counts, he had 13 2-0 and 1-0 counts. And he only threw the fastball 3 times.
Yeah.
So, but there's one time when he threw the fastball and he dots it low and away. And as he's getting the ball back, I swear to God, he's got that expression on his face like, oh, okay, it's one of those nights. And I swear, it's like the second inning. But he's like, oh, if my misses are going to dot low and away like that, like then I'm going to be good today.
That's awesome.
But the reason, I guess, that I'm a little bit skeptical going forward, and I actually I got Renato Blanco for this two start in TGFBI. So
look at you.
I got that no hitter. Look, watch him just go get blasted by the Rangers and even it all out. But the reason I like him is because the stuff is there in terms of that's a plus changeup, maybe elite changeup. It's an average slider, but you know, an average slider that he commands okay. And then a decent four seam. The thing that I don't like is that in all those 1-0 and 2-0 counts, he was throwing so many sliders and changeups that like next week, they're already going to know that. Yeah. Like they're already going to know that. And what you saw was George Springer bailed Renato Blanco out like three times in these 1-0 and 2-0 counts because he thought he was getting a fastball, literally thought he was getting a fastball and got a slider.
Right.
And I think that next week or against the Rangers, like they're going to have a plan that's like, you know, pretty much just lay off on 1-0-2-0 because a lot of those pitches were not in the zone, you know.
Or at the very least, just be like, this is do not expect the fastball that time.
Maybe just carve it into the opposite field. Like maybe expect a slider that you just sort of, you know, kind of dink out there or, And the changeups that he threw in those counts, none of them were in the zone.
Right.
So he can't like the story of why that game was good is that he kept the slider and the changeup in the zone, but not hanging.
Right. Yeah.
So he did that overall, but given the command grades he's gotten and given the fact that he has last year had a 92 location plus on the four seam that matches up with these kind of 30 on the scouting scale, 20 to 80, 30 command grades that he's gotten. I kind of just think that this was a little bit of a one game blip. Like I do think he'll have other good games. It's just going to be really hard to tell when they're going to happen.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there for a lot of reasons. I think that's such good analysis about the usage. In certain counts, it makes all the sense, and we have actually started to see that. You know, we had Andrew Bailey have a fantastic quote about fastball usage. I don't know if you saw this. You must have.
Yeah, the jabs.
About like the jabs, it's perfect. It's exactly right.
Like, basically, the fastball is a jab, and it was a really good idea because, like, you know, you don't knock people out with the fastball. You can.
Right.
If they don't expect it. So it's like jab that where they're coming forward and you just get them right. Like, but normally the fastball is jab, jab. And then the knockout pitches, the you know, the uppercuts and stuff are the.
Exactly.
The sliders
and changeups, whatever they are. And we've seen that, like, that's the perfect way of something that I've been trying to express for a while was Kenta Maeda is the perfect one for me. Of sneaking in your fastball. And then the slider splitter was really what you're trying to do. But, thank you. Like Shane Bieber, same idea, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to overwhelm you with the slide, but the fastball, I'm just trying to get to the point that I can take you out with other things. And Renato Blanco certainly seems like that now too. I will mention at least like he has a high IVB four seamer. I mean, he did last year more at 18. This was lower to like 16, 17.
His high lock is good.
Right. High lock is so good.
I can learn.
Yeah, look at you. Amazing. I love it much.
But his
I love highlock.
His four seam was generally in the top third of the zone. And in this game, he didn't seem like he was spraying it way beyond the zone. So,
no.
I mean, maybe there's something he worked on in the offseason that improved his command. But
it's possible. But I, you know, as much as I love command, I also recognize that it's not always consistent. And that's why we don't like it as much. Mm-hmm. That makes a ton of sense. And yeah, this was one of those nights like that four seamer in the corner. There is a feeling I've had this before of it's okay. When you watch a game and you know guys being so dominant and then Jazz Chisholm hits a DeGrom 0-2 fastball that's way out of the zone for a home run and you just go, this is not fair. Right. Mm-hmm. Like you absolutely know as a pitcher at times when it's just, oh yeah, give me the ball. I know it. Like literally it's not unfounded confidence. I can do anything I want right now, and I know that you're not going to hit it, right?
Mm.
And some days, like, it feels like that. Some days, how I describe it is that you feel like you're behind on the mound, and that is when you're coming out of it. Everything's not totally like the train moving out of the station. It's as if the train is dragging you. And that's how I always thought about it, is like, I just feel behind everything as opposed to in front of everything. Mm-hmm. So it, you never really know when you wake up how it's going to be, but some days it's just like, yes, mm-hmm. there it is. And then you get that for nine innings like Blanco did. And it was really good. I mean, changeups and sliders were down, everything like that. One element that you really hit that was great there was, yeah, the Rangers are going to be prepared for this 100%. Not to mention, we generally see fatigue after no hitters. It's just a typical thing. The start after, unless you're like Jake Arrieta or something where it's just like a normal night and you just happen to be dope, mm-hmm. Like he was then, you see overworked a bit in the previous one. And to get there, I mean, it was only 104 pitches, yes, but Blanco was not ready for that. Also, the early length of the game is a thing, right? Length of a game, too. So you see
and,
at least
and
the
intensity
next
of each pitch, right?
Like, yeah, right. Length of the the next start, we generally see a depression of skill or a degradation of some kind. You're throwing the Rangers in that. You're throwing that, okay, this is his approach, guys. We should be able to handle this new approach from him. Doesn't seem like a good one now. That said, Blanco's going to show up again this year. He might actually be out of the rotation after that, by the way, because it's Justin Verlander returning. Mm. And it's him. Which is just kind of hilarious to me. Oh, cool, no hitter, awesome. All right, bye bye. You know,
yeah.
But like,
because,
it's
you know, one thing that I was that I think will happen that I saw a little bit of in his first start was JP France like led the minor leagues in strikeouts in 2022.
Yeah, you mentioned that I think on here.
And he used to throw his breaking balls a lot more, and then last year he fell in love with the changeup. So I was waiting to see what he would do this year, and. You know, out of the gate, twice as many cutters as he had before.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I think he could still throw that curveball more, but what we saw with those cutters is an increase in swing strike rate and an increase in strikeout rate. It's still not great. It's still kind of funny to come off of a season, you know, three straight levels. You've been at 30% basically, more than that. I mean, in the minors, his strikeout rate was like, I think like 35%. I'm eyeballing it. And
oh my gosh.
He went to 17% last year and 21% this year. It's just so weird.
Yeah.
I think maybe some of that's the changeup.
Yeah, first start for France against the Yankees. It was a lot of, I mean, even the second one too, there's a lot more four-seamer just kind of scattered around the zone. And that's like, you don't really need to do that if you're JP France. You have the full kitchen sink. I mean, those are jabs, of course, right? But I don't know. I feel like there are many times where he's just kind of I'll just jab whatever as opposed to
conventional or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe he does lean back into those secondaries more, which I think is a good sign for the cutters and stuff. But we'll see there. He should definitely stick around, though. I don't think you're contesting this versus Blanco when Verlander does feel ready to go, which should be like a week or two.
I mean, I think it could be up in there. I mean,
yeah,
Grant still has two options, so.
No, that's a good point.
Like, if Blanco follows it up with a good start against the Rangers.
Yeah. Would you think that they would go six man?
I think, you know who I think gets to decide if they go to six man is Justin Verlander.
Sure. That makes a ton of sense.
Well, because I think, as a team, you would rather get more Justin Verlander and Framber Valdez and Christian Javier starts rather than less or fewer.
Yep. Yeah. Fewer. Thank you. Thank you so much. Oh my gosh. It's so funny. That was me at the bagel shop, by the way. I was just waiting for my bagel. I looked up and they have ESPN going on talking about football on opening day. I think it was. They were talking about football or like the Friday, you know, like I couldn't believe it. And they say more or less wins for some football team. And they say less. I'm like, what? Guys, it's a tangible thing.
Is there any editor here? This is why I think we're losing the battle. Is it like, you know, commercials that go out, right? Commercials that go out to millions of people that are, they spend millions of dollars on this commercial campaign. Those things have been vetted by a lot of people. Those things have been edited. There's no way that the less came in there instead of fewer. By accident, they chose to put less in the wrong place in that commercial. And I can think of like two or three commercials right off the top of my head that use less when they should use fewer. So I think the choice that they've made is fewer sounds hoity-toity, and we don't want to be hoity-toity.
But it just sounds like a wrong note.
It sounds wrong to me. Yeah,
it sounds totally wrong. You know, it's like I'm listening to a melody, and all of a sudden it's like I don't know that goat scream that you guys know. Like that's what sounds feels like to me. I'm like, what? Why? Whoa! Hey. You know,
why did you just use that word? That was wrong.
Yeah. Why'd you do that? Don't do that. I'm so sorry. Anyway, I mean, see, we lost the battle on I Could Care Less, right? That's no one. You only use that in one way now. So we lost that one. Sorry. Anyway, we've got some hitting talk. You got some rammer talk today. And we've got more guys that we want to talk about who really the theme of this podcast, if you didn't get it, is guys who have performed well. And we're seeing if that is something that we do believe in or not. And there's an obvious one, I think. Actually, you said there was an obvious one. I was like, oh, cool, it's going to be that guy. And then you'd pick Blanco. I was like, oh, that's an obvious one too. Okay. And we're going to do the obvious one after this break. That has to be Garrett Crochet. Garrett Crochet, that's two starts now. It was against the Tigers on opening day where Crochet showed up with, I called him Lefty Michael Kopech. And threw fastballs in the zone, sliders in the zone, dominated a really weak Tigers lineup. He got Atlanta next. I'm thinking, okay, that was cool. I don't know if this is something that's sustainable yet for him. I'm not seeing, you know, I'm seeing good metrics on the four seamer. Obviously, throwing hard is great. And then a slider that I don't know how reliable it is. Some cutters, but not really like a ton. I was like, okay, Atlanta, this probably isn't going to go well, probably not a win. All this kind of stuff. And then he goes against Atlanta and shoves. Like, that was absurd. He won him what I call a golden goal. That is the highest whiff total and the highest CSW on a given night among all starting pitchers who threw at least five innings. And now what do we do? Is this actually a breakout season ahead for Garrett Crochet? Is this just kind of a guy in rhythm for a moment and then it's going to fizzle out? I mean, he does play for the White Sox. It's not the highest win chance there, too. I have a lot of thoughts about this. I'm not quite decided. I'm very curious to hear, you know, where you stand on Garrett Crochet.
Well, in my head, I always say it as if it rhymes with rocket, just because I'm a 10-year-old in my head. but the interesting thing that I think is that it looks like a sweeper, but it's not being called that so far. Mm. You know, it's got 15 inches of horizontal movement. I guess it has maybe a little bit too much drop to be a sweeper. And so maybe it's kind of actually a curveball. Yeah. 84 yeah. miles an hour with that much drop and that much sweep. I think.
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense to me. Yeah. We're seeing it at 84 versus the 97. I think a 13 mile per hour drop is kind of closer to a curve than it is a slider. I mean, it's like right in between. I guess this is the most slur value knowledge, say for Jose Barrios.
And the four-seam fastball has legit ride.
Yes. No.
What?
I disagree on that one. I've got it at like 15 inches of IVB.
Weird, because the Savant says 13 inches of drop, which is
well, it does for the start, but IVB, right, being like versus like Savant's is like the vertical break, right?
Yeah.
And that's not IVB because that is not taking into account like the velocity of it, the angle and all that kind of stuff.
The velocity of it.
Like there's a we're using I think it's Alan Nathan's formula for IVB. Mm. So for us, he has 40th percentile vertical break.
Mm. Stuff Plus says it's average, which I would guess agrees with what you're saying is that like it's all velo.
It's velo and extension at 7.1, which is good. That is 86th percentile extension.
But the cutter, I think it's hard to like look at cutter movement and extrapolate just right off the page. But
It's coming at 93.
Yeah. The velo again is good on the cutter.
Location's terrible, but he's gotten away with it so far. Like PLV hates it because it's just like right down the middle. 18th percentile on all cutters. But it's, I mean, strike rate was 86%. He didn't get burned on it. And that, honestly, that was the thing that was a big, that's a big difference for me, that we didn't really see the first start, was that cutter. The cutter usage went up a ton. Only 7 thrown his first one, and then doubled that to 14 in his second one. And my biggest worry was that if you're just fastball slider, and I'm not really believing that the slider is this massive strike pitch. I think, like, he kind of, I guess, let's just call it the breaking ball. I didn't really know it has been 71% strike rate so far, but watching it, you know, I can kind of see where he's intending to go. And the slider has impressed me more being in the zone. I don't know how long it's going to be, but that cutter does add that a little element of the sustainability that is, that makes me more inclined for this, for Grichet, especially against the Royals next. We haven't seen a ton of his changeup though, but it's 3% usage thus far. But any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like it has exactly average movement, which is bad because it's a power change. It only has 6 miles an hour difference off his fastball. Sure. So I know that using stuff less in the early goings for changeups is folly. But I would say maybe an average-ish changeup. And just the fact that he faces so many right-handers and only threw 6 of them so far says to me that he doesn't really have a ton of confidence in it.
Yeah, it's, I mean, yeah, 6 total thrown. Really, I'd be really surprised if that becomes a major thing. His locations of them, I mean, 4 of them have just been so far out of the zone. And yeah, then the 2 that have been in the zone, it's all arm side, just complete misses. The 2 that he has were kind of like elevated up in mid away, mid up away, which I guess were fine. But then again, they hit those.
Well, so 2 that were hit into play for
both of those were the, yeah, those were actually both hits. Those only 2 in the zone. So, yeah, that's not really a thing that we should be, you know, expecting moving forward, I think, for Grichet.
But I think I would think, like, of him as 4-seam slider curve.
100%.
That's what makes more sense to me. And I think that's enough given the velo. Yeah, I think he's really exciting. I think this is a good enough package. I do wonder, like, how will it age? Because, you know, if the movement is not necessarily standout on the fastball and that drops to 95, you know, what's that going to look like? The movement's not standout on the cutter. What if that's 89, you know, 91, 90, you know, so, like, it looks great for now. If it's like a keeper situation, I mean, what are you going to do? He's so young and you're just hoping he adds more innings and keeps the velo up. It seems like it would be a weird time to sell him too. So.
One thing I do have to note, Eno's, by the way, mentioning high lock, which is part of our location numbers. It's just high locations. It's a fun, easy way, instead of just looking at heat maps, to get an understanding of where guys are locating their pitches. So the upper third of the zone or out of the zone, 62% so far for Garrett Whitlock. Not Garrett Whitlock, oh my God, Garrett Crochet. Huh. Garrett Crochet's four-seamer, which was 46% in 2023, 45% in 2022, 32% in 2020. Not large samples before, but obviously a shift in what he's trying to do. Which is, I mean, I think, you know, do you like high fastballs? I don't know if you do.
I do. But my next guy throw a unique pitch.
Oh, who's that?
And he's not throwing high in the zone. And I wonder if it bothers you.
Oh, man.
Longtime friend of the podcast, Spencer Turnbull.
Oh, man, this is a fun one. Okay, yeah. Yeah,
I think he's throwing. You've heard of cut ride before.
Uh-huh.
I think he's throwing a cut sink fastball.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, I just call it a cutter, but yeah, a cut sink is interesting.
Well, the reason, I guess it could just be a cutter. Yeah.
Well, but, I mean, the reason I say that is because he went against Graham Ashcraft last night. And I'm like, this is the same guy. You know, it was really funny. But yeah, it's keep going about that. I think it's a really interesting idea of like a cut sink.
Well, let me just see here. Yeah, I mean, like Tanner Houck, for example, turfed his 4-seam yesterday and went to the, and used the cutter a little bit more. He basically just turfed the four seam is the biggest change, but used the cutter a little bit in those times when he could have used the four seam. And his four seam fastball has 15 inches less, or 12 to 13 inches less drop than his cutter.
Right.
And as a comparison, Spencer Turnbull's cutter cut four seam fastball that's labeled as a four seam fastball has the same amount of drop as Houck's four seam fastball.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Yeah. So what I'm just seeing is that, like, we have a pitch that has the same amount of drop as his sinker, but zero horizontal break. So that's maybe a one seam?
Yeah. I don't know.
That's what a one seam does, I think.
Sure. So I'm seeing, it's pretty wild. Normally when I see a zero or one percentile, I think like we broke our percentiles, but no. Turnbull's quote unquote four seamer, zeroth percentile in drop, and and then first percentile in horizontal movement. So,
which I think is so far from the norm that it's good.
Yeah, I can understand this completely. It just looks weird. It's just really strange.
And I think otherwise you could totally understand Turnbull in the context of modern baseball. He added a sweeper, you know, he's cutter, sweeper, sinker, change, like throwing a curveball. It's kind of boring, except, well, throwing the curveball, throw in his old gyro slider too. So now he's a six pitch guy.
Yeah.
And then you start looking at the four seam, you're like, oh, his four seam is actually a sinker. And then you look at his sinker and you're like, wait, his four seam is a sinker with 11 inches less horizontal break. Like, what are we looking at?
Right.
What is this thing?
Yeah. And I got to say, it's funny. Back in the day, I was so upset about him throwing his sinker because I didn't think his sinker was very good. Spencer Turnbull just, it sometimes was all right jamming against righties, but he usually against lefties a ton.
It's pretty average pitch. I
mean, right. It had, in 21, it had a lot of horizontal movement, 18 inches of ride. And if you're wondering how I'm getting all this stuff really easily, it's all on our player pages under the stuff tab for any of these individual pitches. And with the four seamer, I remember shouting back then, I was like, man, just throw this pitch more. It's just better for you. You're getting like a 13% swing strike rate in 2021. Let's just use this. But to see him just go, okay, no, and do something completely different. And at least he's not, you know, utilizing the sinker 22% of the time. It's 10%, 11%. And my instinct, I'm checking this right now, is that he's saving that sinker for righties, as you should, to try and jam them inside and then utilizing the cutter for everything else. And yeah, it does look like that. It's 20% usage against righties, which would explain the 10, 11% overall, which is good. He's not getting it inside, but that's another story. At least he's trying to. It's an interesting pitch. I saw all the strikeouts yesterday for Turnbull. It was seven of them against the Reds in Philadelphia. Two were just really like so far out of the zone, almost waste pitches on his breaking ball that were just either check swings that were called for, like one in far in the other batter's box that shouldn't be swung at or bounced well in front of home plate. So I'm like, all right, whatever. One was a really filthy changeup, believe it or not, to a lefty. I was like, oh, I didn't know you can do that. Okay, that was cool. And then the others, I think there were four of them, which were just these one seamers or whatever you want to call this cut four seamer up and away to lefties and getting like called strikes with them or like up and really away to lefties.
So these backdooring?
Yeah, backdooring up.
Backdooring a cut sink fastball up.
Yeah.
So, so I
like,
mean,
these are weird swings. Probably like, in his head, in the zone, and they just like, oh, maybe it is, or maybe it's not.
I think in his head, it's his four seamer.
Right. No. I'm saying like to the batter, they're like.
But then letting, like, to the batter, it's like, oh, this is a sinker, except it doesn't. And if it's backdoor and they think it's a sinker because it has the same vertical movement as the sinker, and then it doesn't do the 11 inches of horizontal. So it stays in the zone.
Yeah.
It's not backdoor. It's, what is that? It's like playing off. It's tunneling off of backdoor.
Right. It's a troll pitch.
It's a troll pitch. Well, it's just like, it's a pitch that like stays in the zone when the hitter thinks it's going to leave the zone.
Right. It's like a four seamer to a changeup thing. Right.
Is there a word for that?
It's freezing them.
Freeze take. It's a freeze take pitch. Yeah.
And that worked. The thing is, like you're mentioning with Blanco, like, okay, we know what this is now. You know, like if you're a lefty seeing this, you're not going to think it's the sinker. Maybe you can play the changeup off of it and got one whiff on that. It doesn't seem like it's unique, but generally when we see unique things like this, it doesn't last a long time. It gets figured out. And it's not like this vicious movement, I don't think. I mean, it's like a cutter. It's coming in at 90 and 91 at times. Or 91 is what the average is, but it got a little bit lower as it went on.
What do you on your pages here?
Yeah.
That I'm looking. Could I see the average? Okay, so if I go to cutter, his cutter tab, he doesn't have a cutter, but I can see the SP MLB average.
Yes.
So minus 2.6 horizontal, 7.3 vertical.
Right. And then the four seamer is minus 0.5.
Is his sinker is 12 horizontal, 4.7 vertical. So it's okay. It's actually, it's pretty close to a cutter.
Yes, four seamer is so just to give you guys a heads up. So horizontal break normally on a cutter, the average is minus 2.6, and a vertical break is 7.3. As far as the vertical break goes, Turnbull's four seamer is 8.1. It's pretty much like the average break of a cutter as far as vertical movement goes. He doesn't have as much aggressive glove side because it's only a minus 0.5. So but that's pretty close to the average of the minus 0.26 of a cutter.
It's pretty close to cutter.
But yeah, but it is neutral is the thing, right? That's I think the more emphasis of the horizontal break. It is neutral. So this might be like your most cut fastball you want, right? It's not quite all the way there to the average cutter. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't feel like, I don't know. I feel like if you swing at this and you know this thing exists, this feels like just like a complete duck of a pitch. Yeah. Am I right? I mean, like it's just not really moving glove side. It's falling a bit. It's at 91. You know, like
is this? I'm looking at him throwing one over and over again too.
Oh yeah, that's from last year. Yeah, that's from 2023, which not as aggressive of movement, I don't think, as the one we're seeing now. I mean, even then I was saying, oh, wait, this thing is a cutter. And then now it's even more so than it was last year. But yeah, I mean, that one you see over and over again, that's because we have a GIF on everything, guys. Yeah. That you can see is not an exciting pitch.
No, not really. It's well placed for that one. But
yeah, no. So Spencer Turnbull is a really interesting one there. And I'm curious how this does play out for him. It is a good context with the Phillies. I don't think that they want this to be the long-term solution for them, but obviously they'll let him keep going with Taiwan Walker on the mend as long as it's productive. But I'm not totally sold. Also, the sweeper had a swing strike rate of 4%.
Got whooped.
Yeah, 75% ICR.
1,000 slugging.
Yeah, not good.
It has a ton of horizontal movement, but it's 82.9.
I mean, he didn't locate the thing well. He threw a lot of the middle down. So they were either going into the lefty or just like in the wonderful zone for a righty hitting a sweeper. And like they're not taking it on the inside part, but they're ready to swing out there.
Why is he throwing so many to lefties when he has curves and changeups and regular sliders? Is it like new?
Probably because he only had one in the zone with a curve. So he felt like he needed to throw something for a strike to a lefty. And that's all he had.
Just a little side point here. I think I would stash in the very deepest of leagues and just watch the schedule for him and just treat him as a streamer.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I would do too.
But I'm a little surprised at how much change was like found under the hood here. Or maybe I'm not surprised because he had one of the reasons I like pitchers like this is they have a bunch of pitches and you feel like, okay, you've demonstrated the ability to add pitches and you have different pitches and let's tweak one of them, right? And,
right.
And so I just talked to Kyle Gibson about how he used to throw a slider and now he throws a cutter and a sweeper and the slider was his best pitch. And I was like, was that weird for you? And he's like, no, I just threw a slider in the bullpen the other day, my old slider, and it was like exactly the same. There's some ability, which is to like replicate pitches over and over again, even if they're not the best ones, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that sort of describes Kyle Gibson pretty well. And I think Turnbull might be in that class with him. But I do think that there must've been something a little bit toxic about the Tiger situation for him.
No, because that's interesting.
These Tigers are turning out guys with sweepers and this and that, and changing their fastball profiles and affecting change on guys like Mize and Manning, you know, like mm-hmm. they're doing a lot over there and yet they couldn't do anything with him. And I think the big problem is that they had like they like couldn't see eye to eye. There was something bad happened there. And my sort of analysis is that like there was this time where he was supposed to go on the IL and, you know, instead of going on the IL, he was supposed to get demoted. Instead of getting demoted, he got the demotion notice or something, walked out of the office. And then it sounds like he walked right back in and said, my neck hurts. And they put him on the major league IL, but it didn't work because they put him on the major league IL for like the 2 weeks or whatever. And then he had to come off of it. And then he got demoted. I think so. There was like some sort of like, you know, they're not seeing eye to eye over there. It did not end well. And you know, they had a pitcher in Turnbull that still had to use a control left. And they they were like, nope, thank you. See you later.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised about that last year. That was just so quick after coming back from John and everything.
It just speaks to like, you know, some players just need a new place. And yep. Caleb Cotham, the pitching coach in Philadelphia, I think is one of the best.
Mm.
Kyle Gibson was even saying that the whole reason he throws a sweeper now is because of Kyle Gibson.
Yeah, I remember Fast freaking out about that before he went to the Orioles.
Yeah.
It was a fun time. We've got one more guy we got to talk about. We have only a few moments here, but we're going to talk about one more guy after this break. And of course, I say one more guy. There's always like 20, but actually we've been pretty good today. We've been pretty good not doing tangents because, like, you know, we've got real baseball. It's the first time we have real games.
But we did.
You know, we can't say 20 million things about 20 guys because it's
that's
not
right.
Relevant new stuff.
Yeah.
Right? But there is one that's, and I like the fact that we're going into more of the very questionable ones on the back end, not like Jared Jones, he's amazing.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Like, okay. So it's Brady Singer is the one I wanted to talk to you about because Brady Singer to me is a little different. I've absolutely bucketed him into like, this is just Brady Singer. He's been 4 years, the prototypical cherry bomb of just, hey, do I have my slider gaining a ton of whiffs today? Awesome. Am I getting my jabs in with my sinker? Great. Lee called strike rate, all that fun stuff. But he had a little bit of a change that propelled this ridiculous outing. And I'm curious if you buy into it. I personally don't. However, it is something new, and at least that's nice because we've been waiting for so many years. I joke every year. I put out the Bernie Sanders tweet of, I once again am asking you, Brady Singer, to find a third pitch.
And he found one, but it's not one that you necessarily wanted, I don't think.
Right. Well, okay. So there was like a sweeper and stuff, but honestly, only through, according to us, just one of them. And the changeup was the pitch, quote unquote, in previous years. And oh, hey, what do you know? It's four of them. The real thing is that instead of being sinker slider, which is obviously you need one more thing against lefties, he did find something different against lefties, and that's a four-seamer. So at its core, this four seamer, 7 feet of extension, there is an opportunity for something. He has a relatively flat delivery of 1.2, which is good. It's not 1.3, 1.4. It's not, though, like the 0.7 that terrifies me. That's actually good, and it allows you to take advantage of that extension if you do go upstairs. So what I saw from Brady Singer was just 50% high lock, and you use these against lefties up and away, not inside. And when it was inside, it was like in the danger zone, like down and inside. Like, don't do that. Like, really hittable near the middle of the plate, like absolute nitro zone. Nothing up and in, unfortunately. But maybe there is something to that. It was just a 7% swing striker. I think he got like one or two whiffs on it. That's it against lefties. I'm not really sold that Brady Singer is now this ridiculous 19 whiff a game kind of guy. I see it more as just, oh yeah, your slider was really good against righties in this one, and you got some whiffs against lefties. And some days it's just like that. You play the X games that David Cohn talks about, of living down away, where sinkers either come back over or sliders go off of the plate. You make an X on the down and away part of the zone. But for me, I'm not really that convinced that Singer is now a new man and is now finally being the guy we wanted him to be back in 2020. I'm curious where you're at with Brady Singer.
Well, only three of those four seamers were put into play, but one was for a double. And he was exclusively throwing the four seamers to lefties. So it is funny to kind of look at stuff and movement profiles for pitch and think this is not a good pitch overall, which I think is what I see when I look at the four seam. I think it's not a great pitch.
Right.
I see that PLB has it above, just barely above average overall, but I would assume that some of that is location, because the locations look pretty decent in terms of ball strike.
Right. He doesn't have any massive misses, which are always just going to be like a zero.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So that does mess up the PLV.
In terms of stuff, like he was telling me that he was throwing 17s. I was surprised by that. Well, guess what? He averaged 13.4. So if he had been throwing 17s, I would have really taken notice, because from his release point, you wouldn't expect 17s. And you didn't get them. Is 13 enough of a separation in terms of vertical break? You know, his sinker gets 8.7. So it is a difference. But he's not playing off that difference to lefties. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you were playing off that 5-inch difference, we were throwing some sinkers and then throwing some four seamers, which maybe he'll eventually do. I think he can get a little bit more benefit from his arsenal in terms of having more than two pitches against lefties.
Mm-hmm.
So some of this is just like incomplete data. You know, it's like I can't give him the full grade yet on the paper that he submitted. He has to do another one, I feel like.
Yeah. I mean, he's a cherry bomb. That's just what he does. He's so well known to have this high called strike rate against righties. It's, oh man, 32% called strike rate yesterday on that, or not 2 days ago on that sinker. Yay. You know,
yeah.
That's kind of what he loves to do. So he has this high CSW because it's a high called strike rate on it.
And then that's the sinker in the same freaking place, dude.
Right.
He loves the low and away swing. Yeah.
Also, what I mean, I remember last year, he has these runs where the slider becomes such perfect precision. Like we just saw with Jack Flaherty, where it's really just perfectly down and just only glove side and low. And those are the times where he can actually soar. And then as long as the sinker is just not allowing, you know, the pitches right down the middle that get destroyed, then he's going to have a good game. Right. And it's always this reverse too. I see this in Saif Savant. It's like you have 16 whiffs in the slider and then 16 called strikes in the sinker, you know, it's just completely different, needs, so that if one of those two fail, a singer fails.
There's just nothing, yeah, and there's nothing else to do,
right?
Like, and like, you know, bigging up the sweeper and then throwing one, so his offseason plan was four seamer and sweeper. Well, he threw one sweeper and he threw all the four seamers to lefties. So
right,
it's a little bit of a lesson in like, what do we hear in the off season? What do we hear in March? And then what happens when the rubber meets the road? What happens when the rubber met the road was he changed his fastball profile against lefties.
Yep. And I mean, that's always been biggest weakness for Singer. I mean, typical Singer slider guys is what are you doing against left-handers?
But the four-seamer itself, at least in without context, looks bad or boring.
Yeah. The one benefit I will give is if he's able to make it like Bailey Obers, because he does have a good flat angle. He does have a good amount of extension, 92, 93. Even with the low IVB, like so if he is actually
high in the zone a ton.
Right, yeah, what do you know? High in the zone. It's crazy. yeah, if he's able to do that with a consistent, and honestly, if he's able to command that well enough just to jam guys with it, then like that will work. I've always dreamed of a day that
Craig's on the plot here, you know.
Yeah, it's like half and half
on your player page.
Yeah.
And what are these? Oh, so those are up and away for lefties?
Yes. Because you see the play, I always preferred this. Someone actually made a point once where the GIF is from the pitcher's perspective to the catcher. Mm-hmm. And so the strike zone plot should be of the same perspective. And that makes all the sense in my head. Okay.
So he throws it low and in to lefties and high and away to lefties.
Right, the nitro zone to lefties. I'm like, dude, what? No.
That sounds crazy to me. He must be playing the same trick that he plays with the sinker, which is, I'm going to throw you some back foot sliders. And then once you start taking those pitches, I'm going to throw
the four seamer there. Right. It's just so dangerous. Right. I'm not a huge fan of that, but again, no massive wastes on it. Those up and away ones. Maybe he got one whiff on one of those.
I guess he's a pretty good command, man.
Yeah. It's something to at least look at with this is to see how he's using that four seamer to see if that's actually going to be the thing that he needs against the
home against, like, I think 2/3 of the offenses in the league.
Mm-hmm.
It just that he does play well with home, which is like he's kind of playing with fire with some of these locations that we're talking about,
right?
And then Kansas City is just going to help him clean up some of that mess.
Yeah, it's possible. It absolutely is. There is a chance that this four-seamer instead of the sinker against lefties is good enough. Mm-hmm. I'm marriage with you.
A really small arsenal. He's not Spencer Strider, and yet he's out here basically two pitching it against both sides.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I will say a lot of guys two pitch it to both sides.
Yeah.
That's become a very popular thing, which is fine with me. I think generally the problem of being a two-pitch pitcher is that you're going to be one pitch mostly with one side, right?
I mean, that was Graham Ashcraft's problem last year.
Yeah, and he's then threw sinkers all of a sudden, more than cutters yesterday. Threw more sinkers than cutters yesterday.
I mean, Ashcraft, I thought, were savants that it was 33, 33, 33.
Oh, really? We have like one or two different ones or something like that, or like one extra cutter is a slider or something like that. So I'm like, you know.
It led to a big debate, which is like, the people online were saying like, why he doesn't need the sinker. The sinker doesn't have good results against lefties or righties. And against righties, he's got a little bit more of a tight arsenal. And I was like, not really, because against righties, the cut fastball is not as ideal. So with the sinker, you can be a little bit more sinker sweeper, to righties, and then to lefties, you're more cutter.
It could be cutter slider. That's fine.
Cutter sweeper. Yeah.
Yeah, you can do that. That's okay.
Yeah.
It's not ideal, but you can do that. I mean, you can also play the Corbin Burns game of that cutter down and away. Honestly, not even just up and into lefties. You know.
Oh, the sort of surprise, the freeze take again.
Yeah, and also the freeze take and it's just really hard to commit to this thing. And like when you do, I mean, Burns does this all day.
Because he's throwing 98.
Yeah. Right. So I mean, that's good for Ashcraft.
But I was like, my point with the sinker above all else is just throw something else.
Yeah.
Just throw something else. Just throw something. It doesn't even matter how good it is. Just throw something else.
Yeah. That's a big thing of stuff plus, and something I really took away when you presented that at Arizona was just adding a third mediocre pitch helps everything.
It's hard. Yeah. It doesn't, the model doesn't love that idea. but I think it's something that I believe. And so I think he should even throw a curve.
Mm.
You know,
oh man,
the kind of a lollipop 75 mile an hour steal a strike. But
the one negative I will put is
getting ready for 98. They see 75. They're like, won't swing. If you can get drop that in the zone, called strike. Right. Okay, move on.
But what's been the biggest detractor of Ashcraft we've said over the years?
Command or size of arsenal?
Yeah, command. Like stuff plus was amazing. It's just that the command doesn't match it, right? We don't like last year was a scatter plot of cutters for Crawford.
So or throws Ashcraft, curves right? And he can't get in the zone.
Right.
That's
going to be a problem. So I mean, I'm with you that on the hypothetical level, yeah, that should help. And it's kind of why we didn't really expect the sinker to appear because he wasn't able to command it last year, and like it didn't feel like you should assume it.
Okay, but pick one.
It is better now, though. No, this is what I want to say.
All the names you said today.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. We got to get going. Let's say
you got to pick one up for your team. You can only have one.
Oh, I'm picking up Crochet easily.
Oh, Kyle.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Oh no, you mean the actual interesting ones?
The more.
Yeah. So what we got? It was Turnbull. It was. Who was
Blanco.
Your first one? A Blanco. Oh, Blanco's so fun.
What else are we talking about?
I want to say it's Blanco because he'll be back at some point this year, I think. I mean, I'm just assuming that it's just not, don't start him against the Rangers and then he gets displaced. But he'll be back, and the Astros is the best team context, I think, for them. So I'm going to go there. Oh, I love it. You don't see the twiddling hands of.
I think I'm gonna go with Ashcraft. I think.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I'm still the stuff is there. The rotation spot is probably there for the longest out of all.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And so, especially in places where I don't have to play him all the time.
Yeah. Right.
I'd love to have Ashcraft on my bench, to see how this goes.
I didn't understand that Ashcraft was at play here. Between him and Blanco, it's pretty even. I think that Blanco at least can feel more like actually like productive on a per start basis.
Who?
Well, Ashcraft.
Blanco?
And also I feel like I would understand Blanco more, you know, than Ashcraft. I just wouldn't know what I would get. But anyway, you got to go.
Who did you bring up?
Today?
Yeah.
I brought up Brady Singer and I brought up Garrett Crochet.
Okay. So you wouldn't you wouldn't take Singer above?
No, I don't believe this.
Yeah.
I would take him over Blanco. But I don't actually like right now you should take Singer.
We kind of don't believe any of these guys, it sounds like a little bit.
What's that?
We kind of don't believe any of these guys.
No. I mean, Crochet the most, but it's with Singer at least, I am a little intrigued that maybe the four seamer is enough for lefties. If you made a good point, like, hey, he's getting in the zone with his four seamer. Maybe that is all that he needs against them. And then the sinker slider is obviously good enough against righties. And maybe that's it. And I'm just being too whatever. It's what he used to be. We've seen this before. But maybe there is actually something in there and you would want to take a chance with that now. Ashcraft, I do want to mention his cutter was not scattershot. It was middle and down, but it wasn't like up and like way out of the zone as we've seen before too. And because the sinker actually did get strikes, like maybe there was something there that makes us reevaluate Ashcraft. I'm curious to kind of see it over time. But fun stuff here. You know, thank you so much for taking the time here. You got to go. I saw you in a different environment too, which is a lovely, lovely background. I got to say, lovely frame.
Yes. Here in San Diego, off to on a run and then to the game with the kids.
Oh man, I'm hoping that this Cole Reagan's Corbin Burns game isn't rained out right now. You guys will know by the time you're listening to this. But that is going to do for today. On the behalf of our guest, Eno Saris, my name is Nick Pollock, and we'll talk more about the craft next week.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters. Both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.